Welcome to Turning Pages, a series of in-depth conversations with authors about their works.
All right, well, Fawn Parker's latest novel is called What We Both Know. It's available now through McClellan and Stewart, and she joins us on the program. Welcome to the show, Fawn.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I had read an interview that you write from a place of scenes or story before you create your characters. Is that like how you work in general, or was that specific to this novel? Like what's kind of the birthplace of an idea for you?
I think it depends. That is a good way of putting it. I do often start with a scene or a feeling before my characters come out, but it does depend on the project. I think at this point in my experience, whatever amount I have, I definitely have a sort of a routine of beginning with just like a feeling and then seeing who fits that feeling and what they might be doing.
So with this novel in particular, then what was the feeling, or like, was there an impulse of a specific story that you wanted to tell?
I really wanted to talk about memory and abuse and the way that those things are connected, or how they sort of push against each other. And I wanted to write about a woman who was and wasn't a victim. So a victim of abuse who has complicated feelings about that, or almost has imposter syndrome about what's happened to her and it never being enough in that sense. So that was sort of where it all started.
Right. So Hillary is your central character. She's kind of the person who comes out of that impulse. Mm-hmm. How do you then go about inhabiting her or creating her interiority from that impulse? Like what kinds of thought process, or is it kind of like you write her story and then kind of suss out who she is through that?
Yeah, it's almost like meeting a person in real life, obviously with an amount of control that you don't have over real people. Mm-hmm. But it's getting to know somebody. I think you sort of start to make sense of them. So I would put her in this first scene, whatever it is, and just sort of see what would make sense. And based on who she was in that moment, I might get an idea of how she would react in another moment. And they feel to me like they craft themselves in that way, and I just kind of follow. And I'm sure it's influenced by people I do know and by myself, but I always feel like I'm like carving them out of a block and they're already in there. I just have to sort of like dig them out.
So if you ask the right questions about them, that's how you kind of reveal who they are? Or if you put them in the right situations, it starts to tell?
Yeah, like try them out in a sense. So she's like, the book opens with her cooking breakfast for her father, so she's caring for him. And I'd think, well, how does she feel about this? And is she making her own breakfast too? Does she prioritize herself? And then I might get a sense of like what kind of driver she is and how her social life is. And she just kind of unfolds from there.
So one of the things I noticed about Hillary is like she has a very busy interior thought space,
mm-hmm.
right? Like there's not a ton of action in this novel, but it feels breathless because she's always breathless within her own mind.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like, does that come out through that, like that making breakfast? Like, do you find her kind of wrestling with these things, like as she's, you know, preparing eggs?
Yeah, to some extent, that's how I experience the world. I think a lot of that isn't a choice. And so that's sort of what the inside of my own head is doing. And that's, I think I can't help but inject that in some of my characters.
Mm.
But I do think that everything is full of meaning, especially the smaller your life becomes. And so this isolated woman living in her family home, and she's with one person all the time, it's her father. I think her interiority just grows because that's all she has. So it's like the eggs she's boiling for breakfast are full of meaning for her because she doesn't really have anywhere else to go.
Right. The decision to go and care for her father. I mean, obviously, you know, her parents have split up. Her sister's dead. She's the only living relative. But the notion of like her feeling kind of compelled to do that, considering, you know, her history with her family.
Mm-hmm.
Did that present a problem at all? Like, did you like kind of come up against, would she do this?
I did, yeah. I think with this character, she would. I think she's very devoted, and I think she has a complicated sense of self, and so she often defines herself against others. But I think in her world, that's just what you do. When somebody's sick, you care for them. You don't really ask questions. When there's a job available, you take it. And I think part of the what I enjoyed about writing this character is she falls into such horrific situations just because she's sort of like a yes woman in that way.
Mm. The notion of like being duty bound and not necessarily like reflective of
yes
what that does to her.
And having no aim, really. Like, I don't think she knows what she wants. She kind of wants to be a writer, but she doesn't. I think she just ends up places.
That decision to make her someone who wants to be a writer but who hasn't had success at it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, her father, who she's caring for, was a major writer and a successful one. Like, creating that kind of inherent disappointment or, you know, oppositional structure to her and her father's relationship, that like she's not what he is.
Yeah.
Was that kind of like something she was revealed to be right away, or how did you kind of come up with that aspect of Hillary's personality
I
and life?
I think, as far as I understand her, I think that her role in her family growing up and in adulthood, she's sort of nearing middle age in this book, is that she's always been a little bit different and a little bit off. So she was like not really her father's favorite, and her sister was more feminine and sensual than her, and her mother's very difficult. And I think this woman just ended up feeling like she didn't really have a role. And so even being a writer, it's like, it's not her own. She can write her father's book, but her own book is not deserving. And I think it just all kind of falls into her character.
She at one point says she's powerless to language. She says, I cannot hear words and not understand them. I cannot look at a page and not see what it has to say. In some ways, she's more a reader than a writer.
Yes.
Was that, you know, to gift any prospective reader of this book, like a sort of like really feeling of sympathy or like kind of connection to Hillary through that?
That's interesting. Yeah, maybe. I think that she does feel outside of that world. And I mean, it's how I feel too. I think a lot of writers feel that way. It's like, you're never really doing it. You're never really the thing, because there's no way to be a writer or to know if you're a writer. And I think, yeah, for her to feel that and to feel powerless to language and all the different things that could mean, I think it's just something I was hoping people might relate to in this like nebulous imposter syndrome that we all seem to have.
Mm. Like, I mean, so Hillary herself, you know, is trying to be a writer. Her father's a writer. Does this allow you to wrestle with some of the thoughts you're having as a writer through these characters? Like, is this something where you can draw on experience or feelings to convey them somewhat more kind of accurately, or at least, you know, believably through these characters?
Yeah, definitely. I think there were a few different aspects of being a writer that I was challenged by at that time, and I still am, and questions around like the institution and the role of men and the power and authority of men and all of the grooming and the secrets. And I think she faces a lot of those questions. Like, there's the quietness of the department that she worked for. They don't want to talk about her father sleeping with his students. And there's knowing that she has to sort of speak this coded language to the agent to sell the book. You can't just be honest about having no work done, or even about the father's mental awareness degrading.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are always questions that we have. It's like, how much of yourself do you give in order to get what you want in return? And if what you want is being a writer, what do you sacrifice to be a writer?
So her father's memory loss, like I said, I mean, it's central. She's coming back to care for him. And the reason she ends up kind of writing this memoir or ghostwriting it is because his memory's failing. The like slipperiness of memory,
mm-hmm.
I have to imagine, because, you know, what reading I've done on trauma, that affects memory, that like, you know, people's memories are either ambiguous or changed as a result of trauma. And then obviously this, you know, father character is suffering from dementia, or like early onset at least. And so his memory's slippery. And so you've got two central characters and a, you know, existence of this past abuse played out through them misremembering it or trying to remember it or dancing around it at times.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a way to kind of cover the scope or like depth of something like the topic of abuse, that like you can't go straight at it and portray it, but you can kind of hint at it, mm-hmm. and couch it in a way that it's not you having to spill it out.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's most interesting to me about that book, or what I found most interesting about writing that book, was that question of like, what happens to abuse if it's misremembered, or what happens to it if it's denied? And a lot of people who come forward about it, it's just blatantly denied by the abuser. And that's so, I think from the outside, we don't realize how powerless that makes the victim feel, or can make them feel. So I really liked going into that deeper and thinking, you know, what can we assume Hillary has forgotten about her own past? As you were saying, that abuse can, or trauma can affect memory. Obviously something's happened to her, like it's in everything she does, but she thinks that's not true. And that's the truth she lives, and her father is forgetting that he abused his children. And so it's like, well, then where is it now? Like, it's in Hillary's trauma and her dysfunction, but it's not in her conscious memory. I just love the complexity of thinking through that and thinking where the abuse actually exists.
So giving yourself kind of that question, then, how do you go about setting up with answers within the book? Like, if you're thinking, how does this manifest or come out through Hillary? What's your thought process to like find a solution for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated. I think there are no answers, really. I think in the world of the novel, the closest thing to an answer is that Hillary eventually just becomes empowered enough to almost see herself as a writer for the first time. That's how I see the ending of the book happening, is that she finally takes on that title and feels deserving of it, and given to her by her father, which is also complicated. It's like she needs his permission. She finally gets it, but what does that mean? And is it really worth as much as if she'd just taken it herself? But yeah, I don't think there is an answer. I think the answer is that the abuse never goes away. If it's forgotten, it's still shaped who she is and what she does, and awful things happen to her, even within the scope of the story, but that there's hope and power. And I would never want to write a book that didn't have some element of that.
I wasn't sure if we were going to give away the fact that her father gives the
credit
to her. Because I'm like, is that like a big, I mean, it's an emotionally big reveal, but is it, you know, like a plot point, like in a mystery novel, but.
I know. I don't know. According to Goodreads, nothing happens. So I guess nothing could be given away.
Oh snap. Yeah, just because it does complicate things that he's the one, she doesn't claim it for herself, right? It's given to her, and then inherently the complicated relationship between the two of them continues to be complicated.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
The fact that her dad's name is Baby.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when did the decision come to call him Baby? And, like, is it... I mean, because it's infantilizing.
Yeah.
And the notion of, like, you know, for folks who start to lose faculties in their older years, we kind of are thought to, like, regress to, like, an infant state, right? That we can't take care of ourselves. And that's, you know, this closed loop of, like, how we are as humans. Was that tied to that? Or was it, like, to undercut some of his power and legitimacy?
Maybe on one level, because I think the name is perfect in that way, but it's something that comes from my real life. My dad was adopted, and his name on his birth certificate was Baby Davidson, because they give you, you know, it's just like the book. They give you the first name Baby and then your surname. And when I was a teenager, my sister and I both changed our names legally. And so my dad sort of joked out of sight that he was going to change his name too, to like prove how silly it was that we were doing that. And he was like, well, I'm just going to go back to my real name, which is Baby Davidson. And I thought that for him was like a place of power. Like, he was being like, you are ridiculous kids. And like, I think that I always saw the name Baby Davidson as powerful because it's such a funny, silly name. That this character in the book, who I will say is nothing like my father, does it out of power. He's like, yeah, so what if I have a silly name? Like, I'm also the biggest novelist in Canada. So like, that's what my name is, and you have to say it.
Right. Okay. So yeah, that it's like he's in some sense overcome this name, or
yeah,
like as ridiculous as it is, it has power. I just thought, because, you know, I mean, it suggests you know, the crying infant who demands their way, mm-hmm. and everyone is subservient to baby, right? That there's something to the personality within a name, right? I mean, it doesn't always work out that way. People aren't necessarily their name, but very often people kind of like live up to or into their name.
Absolutely.
He spends a lot of the time rewatching his old interviews to kind of recapture a sense of who he was. I'm curious about, you know, you as an author who's done interviews, who's currently doing an interview, how much you feel of yourself is revealed in these things, and like whether there is a truth to like the fact that you could go back and watch something like that and infer who Fawn Parker is, or in this case, who Baby is. Does that seem believable to you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think I never thought about doing it myself. I think I started to come to that idea because I would always watch interviews. I always watched Charlie Rose. I know he's a complicated person. Mm-hmm. But when I was younger, I would watch all these Charlie Rose interviews and think like I could see something in those people that would make me, I'd unlock some secret about what being a writer was. So if I watched like that famous David Foster Wallace one close enough, I'd find out what about him made him a writer, and then I could copy that and do that too. Mm-hmm. And so I think the idea for this character to do that was that he's just sort of incorrectly trying to remember what it was that made him a writer and like teach it to himself because he feels himself slipping away.
Right, that there's like a code to crack or something.
Yeah, like if you sit the right way in the right jacket and laugh on the beat, then like you're a novelist again.
The attempt to reclaim or kind of come back to who he was kind of goes up against something that Hillary observes, which is that when he's forgetting and he loses a lot of himself, one of the things he loses is anxiety,
mm-hmm.
right? That the things that had kind of kept him hemmed in within his own brain are gone, and he's a more calm person, right? That the nervous habit of pulling hairs from his eyebrows or his arms disappears.
Yeah.
And whether that's a true expression of self or, you know, a person kind of more at peace or the absence of a person. I'm curious about whether, you know, you thought about Hillary exploring that in particular in relation to the absence of her sister.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's something that I think about a lot is in this, you know, this new generation of like therapy people. I think millennials we're like, you know, we're all on pharmaceuticals and we're all on therapy every week. And I think that this idea of unraveling and taking apart our trauma and our mental illness and seeing what's left behind, I think we're all realizing, and obviously it's not only generational, but we're realizing that it's not possible, that like our trauma creates us and our bad experiences create us and our obsessive compulsions are part of who we are at the core. So I agree with what you were saying, or the question you asked about, is that losing himself altogether or is it just losing his anxiety? I think they're one and the same. I think that that's sort of the saddest sign of someone losing themselves is losing their little quirks as well.
Right. Hillary, as you said, you know, she gets to be called a writer at the end by her father, but it's only through writing her dad's story. Mm-hmm. When she tries to write her own stories previously, she gets rejected, sends them off, and then she, you know, discards them so that she doesn't have to kind of be faced with those those failures. Is that kind of a part of exploring like the like inescapability of, you know, legacy in the past, that she can't step out from under what's happened to her?
I think so. I wanted to be careful with that aspect of it because I wanted to represent the possibility for her if she just takes it, like, you know, if she just doesn't live in that home or what she might do after he's gone. It was really important to me that he didn't die in the book because that just seemed so easy. But I liked the idea of her getting a little shred of it and then thinking like, well, what else can I do? Because I am a writer and I've always been. And I think I wanted to be careful with that, though, because I don't like the idea of the victim just having to choose to leave, which is obviously not possible for many victims.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to make sure I represented both, that there was like a glimmer in her, but she's also, she definitely is a victim of her life and her context.
Did you seek any outside advice on how to portray something like this, like to be sensitive and considered of abuse portrayal and how you portray survivors? Like, was that something that you tried to suss out on your own, or did you work with an editor or someone else, a you know, confidant, to figure out how best to do this?
No, I mean, I worked with editors on the manuscript
right.
itself in that classic way of bringing a book through the publication cycle. But in terms of that element of it, I just used my own experience as a woman on Earth, which, you know, we all go through similar things. And a lot of my mother's stories to me as I was growing up, I drew on, like a lot of the more horrific things that Hillary sees are just stories my mother told me. So I think I, in a way, she's not alive anymore, but I consulted what I remembered her telling me and my own experiences, and just I tried to stay true to that, of just what it feels like to navigate the world as a woman.
Yeah, the sequences with, I guess it's in the memoir that Hillary's writing, of her father going on his book tour.
Oh, yeah.
With these students. I mean, that it's gripping and it's heartbreaking. In terms of portraying that, like, did you, was that ripped from any kind of story you'd heard, or did that something that you invented to kind of like best exemplify Baby?
Yeah, that was invented. I think that was the part I had a lot of fun with. I can't remember. I think it was my editor, Kelly Joseph at McClellan & Stewart, who actually suggested I put in the excerpts. I didn't originally have them, as far as I remember. And I just thought it was so funny because I knew that there was something funny about that character, even though he's so revolting. And I really feel that it allowed me to portray that sort of cross-section of, like, humor and evil that I think that's like where he sits. And but no, it's not necessarily based on anything. I just think it's my expression of how I understand him to be,
right?
And obviously filtered through the lens of Hillary.
So those the manuscript portions, like, did you write them after you'd written the rest of the story then, or had you written some manuscript and the editor encouraged you to include them?
It was after.
It was
I wrote
after.
Them quite far into the editorial process, I think. We added them. So I already felt I knew him very intimately.
And you knew Hillary enough to, like, write as Hillary.
Yeah.
Writing Baby.
Yeah.
The, like, literary world stuff, obviously you're, you know, drawing from your own experiences. In terms of writing those kinds of sequences, like, are you having, like, sense memory from, you know, book launches and people coming up and asking questions and just kind of, like, the uncomfortability? What's going through your head as you write that?
I think, I mean, I'm obviously writing it with a bias. I think that I have experienced that world from the perspective of the young girls that he brings with him.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely, like, a little bit of resentment sort of woven through as I portray it from his perspective. But I think being in the literary world in the way that I am, it's just all so classic, or I hope it feels that way to readers. Like, it's just all like that. It's just handshaking and men and drinking. And I guess I enjoy portraying it from a new perspective rather than of the young groomed woman.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that, you know, you wrote it, you thought it's because he's funny in it, that it's not just scary, that presenting him as this nuanced character and not just monstrously, it maybe suggests that like when people are shocked and they're like, he was never like that with me, or like, I never saw a hint of this, that this is how that happens.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what's so important about an abusive character is it's not doing any credit, or it's not giving credit to the victim to write pure evil, because everyone can recognize pure evil. We're not interested in those people. But charismatic, charming, wonderful, attractive people, when they're abusers, that's like, it's impossible. They just get you in their web. And so I think the funnier he can be, and the more charming, and the more we can empathize with him, I think, the more realistic, because that's the kind of person that gets you, and like that's the kind of person that you do fall victim to.
Right. Going back to Hillary for one second, just because I remembered a passage that she writes that suggests maybe an authorial intent, and it says, "I'm too taken by emotion to ever be a powerful writer." Mm. Has that ever been expressed to you, that someone like said you were too emotional, and that, or did you have a feeling like, I don't know if I can be a successful writer because I feel this too much?
Yeah, maybe both. Maybe, I mean, I think that's the stereotype of the woman writer. It's like flowery prose and emotion, and we're hysterical. And so I guess it was a bit of a jab in that sense. But, you know, I think writing is emotion. But yeah, I think it's been an anxiety of mine throughout my career. It's like, I'm not writing enough action. I'm not writing enough car chases and police, you know. But probably it comes from that.
Is that maybe why you write from like an incident or an action or some sort of like actual scene first and then figure out the person after? Emotions are maybe dictated somewhat by that initial thrust or movement to kind of cue against that?
I think it allows me to ground it, because I think I could write like 500 pages on emotion and that would just be so boring, but it comes easily to me and the action doesn't. So I think starting from a place of like what's happening is just a good reminder to me that like it's a book, you know, have some sympathy for your reader. It's not a diary entry. And I think, yeah, starting with the scene allows me to at least anchor all of the thought and internal monologue somewhere.
Right. That, you know, Hillary is making breakfast and then in her head thinking about things, because all of us, when we're doing kind of those folding laundry or those kinds of things, have a lot of thoughts because we don't have to put a lot of thought into that actual action.
Yeah, exactly.
The book is What We Both Know. It's out through McLennan Stewart Font. Thanks very much for taking some time to talk about it today.
Yeah, thank you so much.